What's going on, Positivamente Yo family? It is me, Rafael. Welcome back to another amazing episode. This week, I am so excited to take you on this journey with James Bush. He is a trailblazer in the aviation industry, an openly paused individual living in his truth, and truly being an advocate, literally stepping out of the proverbial closet on being HIV positive and coming out to the entire world. I cannot wait for you to listen in on this interview. I'm so happy you're back with me for another week. Don't forget to like, listen, and subscribe. Share this with your friends. And don't forget, we are adding something new this season, which is our poetry prose. And we have amazing PSAs to remind you to vote, vote, vote. And don't forget to fill out the census this year, folks. Critically important steps towards helping us change this country and the world, truly. Wherever you are in the world, vote. Specifically, these PSAs are geared towards our US audience, but wherever you are in the world, vote, stand up, be counted. I cannot wait for you all to meet James after the jump. Thank you for going on this journey with me again. Positivamente Yo, we'll be right back after the jump with our first segment with James Bush. Welcome back, folks, to Positivamente Yo. My guest today is the amazing, badass James Bush, who made history at the top of this year. In a year full of chaos and craziness, he became the first HIV-positive person to fly a commercial plane and challenge discriminatory bans that existed out in Europe. And thanks to the help of HIV Scotland, he overturned that stance, not allowing people who have HIV who wish to pursue a career as a pilot and obtain a license. And I just want to thank you, James, for agreeing to do this, being on the podcast. And yes, we're going to talk about that historic moment and all the badass work you did, but thank you just as a human being for being on this podcast.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, so let's just kind of dive in. Let's get to know the man behind the legend, actually, because I've been following you since January. I saw it on all my feeds. I was so shocked in a good way and truly honored and like, yeah, badass, fight the power. But let's get into a little bit about you, background, where you're from, where you're living. Give us a little bit of like history into James.
Yeah, sure. So I initially grew up in the Midlands in England. So a little town called Stoke-on-Trent, which is just about a half an hour away from Manchester. I grew up there with my family, my older brother. And ever since I was a kid, I always sort of wanted to be a pilot, really. It kind of came from always being the kid that was on an airplane and wanted to sort of, you know, go in the flight deck whilst we still could. Always grabbing the window seats, and I was always sort of fascinated by it. So that came from a sort of a really early age. But as I was growing up, it sort of was really apparent that it was always going to be something that was quite expensive, you know? So I needed to go into a different career at first to sort of raise the money to then fly commercially. That being said, I started flying initially when I was 15 and managed to get my private pilot's license over here in Europe when I was 17. So yeah, it's been something that's, you know, this sort of dream has been with me for a long, long time. And then after I'd got that, I went off to uni or college, I guess, as you guys call it, to study law. So I spent 3 years up in Durham University in the north of England, got myself a law degree up there, and pretty much in week one, I kind of thought, you know what, I don't think this is for me. And that was kind of basically because I always knew that I just wanted to fly, you know, and it was always a case of, you know what, if you can't fly, then you need to go and get a job that's going to pay you enough money to then fund that either as a hobby and ultimately as a profession as time went on. And so I graduated in law and then made the obvious step to go into hospitality. My folks had always ran bars and restaurants as I was growing up, and the company that they worked for had a graduate program, mm-hmm. Which I managed to get a space on. So I went from Durham back down to the Midlands and started working in hospitality in sort of various roles on that program until eventually working as an area manager in operations for different restaurant and bar brands in the UK. And that was basically just to, you know, have a backup career, if you like, to try and, mm-hmm. as I say, you know, save to become a pilot. And then once I was sort of in a position to make that jump, I did.
It's like a more richer background. Thank you so much for all of that. You are an individual who lives in their pause truth, which I love. So meaning in our podcast world in terms, you live as an openly HIV positive individual. When
yes.
did you start living in your pause truth as an individual? Even before we jump into like you really changing the game as far as commercial pilots, when did you as an individual say, hey, I'm living openly and honestly as an HIV individual in this world?
It's a great question. I think I probably couldn't put an individual time or date on it. I always say to anybody that I speak about either living with HIV or wanting to understand more about it, that it's you know, it's a journey. And you know, for me, that started back in 2014 when I was diagnosed. And at that time, I only, you know, I was only open about my status to a handful of close friends, not even my family. Mm. And it took me probably 2 years to get to a stage where, you know, I was comfortable with it, to talk about it with my family and then with a wider, you know, network of friends. But honestly, and you know, until it was really January of this year where you know, I really decided, you know what, I don't want to have that sort of double life, if you like. There was mm-hmm. always people, there was people that knew and there was people that didn't. And there was, you know, coming towards January of this year, there was people that I was kind of thinking, wait a minute, did we have this conversation? Did we not have this conversation? you know, and sort of managing that whole process was, at best, it was exhausting. And at worst, I've never felt so comfortable in myself and in my own skin being openly HIV positive as I have since January, because there's no second guessing. There's no internal sort of dialogue where you're asking yourself, okay, so what? Why did I not tell this person? Or what is my fear here? It's completely the opposite now. So I guess in a roundabout way, it's something that, yeah, there was no defining moment. There was no one moment where I said, right, okay, you know, now I feel ready. It's just something that over the years has become more and more comfortable. And I think the trigger for it, if you like, was probably tied into, you know, everything that had gone on from an aviation perspective, which made me said, actually, do you know what? I almost felt a sense of responsibility to use the platform that I'd got from that campaign and the interest that had, you know, surrounded Pilot Anthony, which was the, you know, the pseudonym that I was using anonymously before I was sort of open about my status. I thought, actually, this is a huge opportunity to change perception here, and it would be, you know, almost criminal not to use that. And I kind of felt that when I came out, for want of a better expression, in January, it was about doing something that would benefit everybody else. It wasn't, you know, that part wasn't about me. That was about how can you get the message out there that if you are living with HIV, there is absolutely no shame in being open about your status. That, you know, there is so much love and support out there, and it shouldn't be a barrier to any career, not just aviation. So that was, I think that's what ultimately changed, really. It was that sense of, actually, you've got a responsibility and an opportunity to help others and make a change. And that's why I did what I did in January.
Perfect, awesome. I think this is a good place for us to break, folks. After the jump, we're gonna come back, and I can't wait to dig in with you, James, as to exactly the situation. And as we continue to talk here, folks, and everyone listening, as you heard from James, your status and your disclosure is your gift. You determine when to disclose or not. I am so honored and in awe again that James decided to disclose in such a public way. Talk about coming out to the world that your status is HIV positive. But after the jump, folks, we'll be right back with James and more on his amazing journey and actually dig in to what like catapulted him to this international spotlight and truly hero in my eyes, because I really look up to him in living in his past truth. We'll be right back after the jump on Positivamente Yo.
Hello.
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 Hello, my name is HIV.
You wouldn't expect me to look healthy, would you?
I'm handsome and suave.
I'm cute as a doll.
I don't discriminate against anyone at all.
I'm black.
I'm white.
I'm gay.
I'm straight.
I come from people who don't know the truth.
Why?
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 Because they've never been tested for proof.
Hey folks, if you like what you're hearing, please like, subscribe, and share your favorite episode on your social media platforms. Look for Positivamente Yo on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. That's POZITIVAMENTEYO, Positivamente Yo. Don't forget, share, like, subscribe. Thank you so much for all the love. Share your comments, your feedback, and your thoughts on whatever we're talking about. Check you out soon. Positivamente Yo on your social media platforms. Alrighty, folks, we're back for round two with the amazing, badass, and might I say very attractive James Bush, who is beautiful, gracing us with his presence today, inside and outside. James, thank you so much again for being back on the podcast.
You are round two. Too kind.
So yeah, let's, before the break, before the jump, you were kind of getting into exactly what led you to this point, the jump, the trigger, everything was around, basically you were not totally hiding it, but it was that living that double life, which I know I've experienced now that I'm living in my pos truth and doing this podcast in a very public way. But I just want to know what exactly happened to the viewers who never heard of you. And again, we have individuals who are pos and non-pos and allies listening in. What sure. is this story? What took off? What transpired around aviation in you that made you truly come out in a very international public way?
Okay, so as I said before, I'd always wanted to become a commercial airline pilot. And back in 2017, I was offered a job with an airline here in Europe. And when I went to get my medical that everyone needs to start flying, or before they start flying commercially, that medical was denied, and it was denied on the basis that I was HIV positive. And the rules at the time stated that if you were a commercial pilot that already held a license, who then became HIV positive, you could continue to fly. However, if you were somebody who was HIV positive that didn't hold a license but wanted to gain one, you couldn't. And that was, you know, fundamentally discriminatory to me. And at the time, it prevented me from taking up the place on the training program with the airline that I'd obtained it with. And I just knew that it had to be challenged, you know. The sort of, to get into the nitty gritty, the detail of it, the rules at the time basically said that people who were flying that became HIV positive could continue to fly, but only as part of a multi-crew. So they would make it that you could only fly as part of a two-person crew, which, you know, you kind of think, well, that's okay. That's the flying I want to do anyway. However, that limitation or restriction that they would put on a medical, they wouldn't give to new applicants. And it was that reason why I couldn't fly. And I sort of spent the time from 2017 up until 2018 on my own, appealing through internal appeals processes with the aviation authority here in the UK, with the European regulator, with other regulators across Europe and individual states. And each time the answer was fundamentally no. And for me, what I just couldn't get my head around was why, you know, why in 2017, 2018 is HIV still considered too risky? Because what they were essentially saying was that, you know, we consider the risk of you becoming incapacitated during flight to be the same as somebody who might have a heart attack or might have type 1 diabetes or, you know, might have insert other acute condition here. But we all know now that, you know, if you're living with HIV on successful treatments, you have an undetectable viral load, not only can you not transmit the virus, you're going to be asymptomatic. There's going to be no danger of you, you know, posing any risk to flight safety within the industry. So that was sort of my position. And after exhausting all of these sort of internal appeals processes with these different regulators, I knew I needed help. So I took the issue to HIV Scotland, which is an incredible charity here in the United Kingdom. They're an incredible HIV charity, a really small operation, but the impact they have is absolutely phenomenal. So please check them out and give them some support. They essentially said, okay, you know, we've got a couple of options here. We think what we should do, we'll write to the CAA, the Civil Aviation Authority ourselves here in the UK. We'll then also, if we could get some political involvement. So alongside HIV Scotland, I took it to my local Member of Parliament here in Scotland, and he raised the issue in Westminster. We also posed a question to Nicola Sturgeon, our First Minister, and she then wrote to the Civil Aviation Authority. And finally, there was a media campaign as well. So Patrick Strudwick, an LGBT editor of BuzzFeed here in the UK, got involved and wrote an article on me. And that was picked up by the BBC. And I think the media combined with the political, combined with the sort of pressure from other charity and medical organizations here in the UK, started a different debate then, which ultimately led to the UK changing their rules in January 2018. So that was when I was officially able to start training, which was, incredible, surreal. It was never expected, or at least I didn't expect it to happen so quickly. But I could train. So that was that part. The bit, I guess, that was, you know, was interesting up until that point was the fact that, you know, I'd done different interviews and the TV all anonymously. And you know what, thinking about it even more now since we started talking, actually, what changed for me? Why did I want to, you know, when did I start to live that sort of, you know, positive truth? It was highly influenced by them, because I thought to myself, wait a minute, I am, you know, I'm on TV, but you can't see my face. I'm on the radio, but you can't hear my voice. I'm tweeting, but you don't know my name. All I'm doing here by doing this anonymously, actually, I'm sort of perpetuating the stigma here, because I'm saying to anyone that's seen this or reading this, you know what, if you want to, you know, fight the good fight, for whatever that might be, because of your status, do it, but don't do it as you. And actually that felt wrong. So once, and I knew that wasn't the end of the story. So it was a case of, in January 2018, I'd got the ability to train, but by that point I didn't have a job, so I needed to sort of decide, do I still want to, you know, go through this on my own? And I did. Once I'd got a job with another airline, that was the point I thought, okay, this, I want to tell the rest of this story now, but there is no universe in which I can do this anonymously, because again, back to that point of, you know, at that point I was comfortable, you know, in my own skin and you know, communicating with friends and with family and partners, you know, that was never an issue for me. So I thought, wait a minute, and this is important actually, and I share this with people a lot, is that, you know, it is your story to tell, it is your diagnosis to share. And I was lucky that I had that support network around me, that at that point when I decided to come out, it almost didn't matter what the response was. If there was any negativity, if there was any sort of adverse reactions or challenges, be it from, you know, from work or from friends or on, you know, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, That at that point didn't matter because I got such a strong support network at home from friends and family. And I guess I'd say that to anybody. And that was the biggest difference. So I guess sort of, you know, how to get to that moment of coming out, I guess it's being comfortable in your own skin, then having a support network around you, and then disclosing publicly to anybody with the intention of trying to, you know, challenge and change perception, I guess, but being ready for the fact that there might be some negative consequences, but if there are, it doesn't matter, because what people's reaction is on them, it's not on you. And that's, you know, that was important to me as well. When I realized that any time in the past that I'd had a negative reaction to me disclosing my status, that wasn't a reflection on me. That was a reflection on how much or little they did or didn't know about what it meant to be HIV positive. And that's something that I've carried with me throughout this year, actually, with, you know, with every subsequent conversation. And that's sort of, you know, why I think it's allowed me to be as open as I have.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I do remember reading the Patrick Sturdwick articles on BuzzFeed, because we would even get them here. And I do, just like you're saying, I remember reading the first two. It really didn't have your name. And then that third one was like, boom, I'm here. And I was like, yes, I love it. And the things that really struck me, because again, we in the United States, folks, and I'm sure all over the world, are really struggling with these research data out of the 90s. And I know specifically in your story, they use research data in the 90s. There's these military men that are this year suing the US military armed services, because again, they're using research data from the 90s that basically exactly has these negative stigmas. And you have really moved even beyond that and have become even an advocate for you equals you, which means undetectable is untransmittable, folks. We promote that here. So how has the industry changed now as a result of the badass work that you've done? And again, we have to be honest, in aviation and in flight attendant and in hospitality in general, there's maybe a lot of individuals who are HIV positive, just not disclosing. Have you seen colleagues or individuals who come up to you even privately and say, hey, you've helped me, like, I feel like I can live in my truth? How has the industry changed? What feedback have you gotten from your industry peers with regards to all of this stuff that's been going on?
So I think the greatest sort of thing about this story was that it started to promote an open conversation about HIV within the industry, which, you know, ultimately was very rarely had at all. And that's, you know, and of course that's why the data was so old, because there was no impetus to go and get new data, because nobody was talking about HIV. I've had, you know, all of the above, really. People come to me in confidence to say, I'm in the same position, and thank you, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna start my training now. People within the industry saying, you know, I'm already a pilot and I am now gonna go and disclose because I feel confident that it will be okay. And that's an interesting one, actually, because the biggest sort of dilemma we had back in January was that there, you know, will be, and I don't know the specific numbers, but, you know, in different parts of the world, there will be people that are working in aviation in whatever role, be it pilot, cabin crew, air traffic controller, that haven't disclosed their status through fear of stigma or, you know, other repercussions to their employment. And the difficulty is, how does that person then disclose that? Because in doing so, you're essentially saying, I'm telling you this now, but actually this has been the case for the past 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, 5 years, and I didn't disclose it on those prior medicals, which, you know, could create a problem. You know, in that somebody might lose that medical. Now, interestingly, what the FAA did a number of years ago was to have an amnesty period to say to people, okay, you know, we know that this is an issue. We know, we understand why this is an issue. Come forward now and we can work together to put that disclosure on your medical and ensure that you're getting the right level of care, support and oversight that you need. In the UK, I found out of an amazing case from back in March this year, whereby another pilot had done exactly that. He'd gone to his doctor to have his medical renewed, and he said, hey, I've been living with HIV for you know, a number of years now, and I've seen what's happened with James and this story. I think it's right that I declare it to you. And fantastically, the CAA and the UK have allowed this pilot to continue to fly, which is amazing, because you know there was nothing. We all know as sort of HIV positive people the challenges that you can face to you know your mental health in general, and to have that exacerbated by knowing that every year you go for this medical, you know, you might be found out, for want of a better word, and what will this mean for my career, would have been a huge challenge. So to know now that people can, you know, go and have that medical, and I should hasten to add, check with the doctor first, check with the regulator, but you know, to know that in principle you could go and have that medical and be open about your status and get that right level of care, right level of oversight, which ultimately makes our industry a safer place, is a fantastic thing. So yeah, there's been people that have, you know, been in that situation, and people from different walks of life that I would never have expected from, you know, from all over the world that have just, you know, messaged, and it's just a simple thank you, you know, that has said, you know, actually, it's great to know that, not necessarily right now, but when the time is right, I can, you know, I can be open too. And that's a huge thing. And, you know, it sounds so simple, but the biggest thing for me has been the times, I mean, granted, not too many this year, but where I've been able to sit in a cafe, a pub, who am I kidding, cafe, sit in a pub with friends or friends of friends. I thought I'll try and be sort of, you know, what's the word? A little bit more balanced there, but no, having a pint in a pub with a yeah. friend, and you know, we get on to the conversation of HIV just by accident. It's not something that I ever sort of, you know, walk in and say, right guys, you know, who knows about you, because you, who doesn't, right, okay, let me tell you. It's never that. But what the biggest thing for me now is feeling empowered to interject and to correct. And if somebody, you know, mentions something that about HIV that gives me an opportunity to say, you know, well, actually, you know, I'm HIV positive, and you know, did you know that if I'm on successful treatments, with, you know, which I am, that I can't transmit the virus to others? And 9 times out of 10, the reaction is still, oh, I didn't know that. And in fact, there was a recent study done by Tackle HIV, which is run by rugby player Gareth Thomas here in the UK, said that 19% of people, only 19% of people knew when surveyed that someone living with HIV on successful treatment couldn't pass it on to a sexual partner. So essentially, 4 in 5 people, you know, that we would sit around a table in a pub or at dinner with, or 4 out of 5 people still don't know. You know, and there's still a huge job to do. And I think it's every level of advocacy has its place. You know, the big campaigns, the large organizations, to individual advocates online, to yourself and the podcast, but to even just doing it at really small levels with people that you know. So that person might, you know, that person that I had a conversation with a few weeks back might go, oh, you know, and the next time he bumps into somebody or sits down with somebody and they start talking about something related to HIV, he'll be able to say, oh, I can't remember the exact details, but what I do remember is that somebody today living with HIV can't pass it on to others, and they're going to live a normal life, just like you and me. And that has probably been, out of all of what's happened for me over the last 3 years, I guess, that's probably the thing I'm most proud of, to be able to say that, you know, being able to contribute in some small way to that. And you know, no matter how many sort of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people see something that you've done, or read it, or watch it, it's the knowing that there's just one person who is HIV positive, or that now doesn't have to go through that same, you know, trauma, if you like, of thinking that they're going to face such stigmas when, you know, hopefully things have changed.
Exactly. No. And I'm literally sitting here listening to your story moved. I actually, for a very short time, I live in Chicago, Illinois now. That's where we are, folks. Chicago. O'Hare is one of the big airport hubs in the U.S. I went, of course, like everybody does. I applied and I got hired to be a guest services rep for one of the companies. I won't say which one. And I got hired and everything. And exactly like you're saying, I'm very honest about my status. And I had shared that with the HR rep. They made me go get a doctor's note saying that I could perform the duties and responsibilities. And I'm thinking, like, I'm totally fine. Like, and so those stigmas, and that's why I really resonated with your story. It gave me hope. It gave me life, because those are the kind of policies that we need to change all around the world. And so I personally thank you. And also, I totally agree with exactly the premise that this is an individualized learning curve and movement. And for all of you folks listening, this is why I advocate for both individual and group mental health wellness and therapies, and really truly spending this time, even using this podcast as a tool, listening to James and truly trying to have those conversations with friends and families that you might not necessarily have. I think this is a good place for us to break, folks. We're going to come back with one more final segment with James. This is going to be the light one, folks. Don't worry. He's been giving us hard, heavy, but truth and knowledge. And this is what I love. And I'm so grateful again, James, that you're here. We'll be back after the jump with the personal question fun round with James Bush, the amazing pilot who has changed all of our lives. Stay tuned right after the jump here on Positivamente Yo. Alrighty, folks, it is time for my favorite new segment that I'm going to feature throughout this entire season, and it's called Poetry Prose. I've really gotten into my own poetry writing, and I will be sharing my own poems throughout the season. However, I wanted to highlight poets that I love and know who specifically speak to HIV and AIDS, and I feel that through the power of spoken word and poetry, we can really move and connect with others. And so, here it is, this week's Poetry Prose.
Blue collar, white collar, the diamond studded, the poor, the rich boy, the businesswoman, the preacher man, the whore, the athlete, the housewife, the addict on drugs, the down low brother, the super hardcore thug, the family man, the son, the mother, the daughter, the doctor, the homeless, the teacher, the lawyer, the best of the best people, the worst of the worst people, the holier than thou, do no dirt, perfect church people, the children, the babies, the unsuspecting lover, the judgmental folk that are in the same boat but look down their nose at one another, from the backwoods to Hollywood, from Hollywood to Africa, from the bottom of the rawest ghetto to the top of high class America. None of us are exempt or invincible when it comes to a disease that allows no reprieve and knows no boundaries in spite of what you may believe. It's not a them over their thing, it's an us thing, it's we. It's ignorance that keeps creating victims because people are out there thinking it'll never happen to me. Well, tell that to the 24 million that have already died, the 42 million still putting up a fight, and I wonder how many people said it'll never happen to me, but they were the ones infected last night, and I wonder how long it'll be before they get tested. How long will they go undetected, unsuspected? And I wonder how many people they'll leave infected. Oh, the message might sound like rhetoric, but the numbers are ridiculous. This is our fight. Someone has to do something about this sickness. Just because the person you're sleeping with gets tested does not mean you know. What it actually means, you're just too big of a coward to go, get tested, know your status. Man, it's like we're living backwards. Older people burying their children 15 to 24 are dying. And for $1,500 for a bottle of medicine, the government ain't even trying. Politicians and pharmaceutical companies, this is big business. As a businessman, I understand, but as a humanitarian, it's senseless. When it's more month at the end of the money, when it's more mouths to feed than it's food, when the only choice left is between your health and being homeless, what's a person to do when you went to agency after agency, followed the protocol, only to find that having health insurance and being positive is like not having health insurance at all? Forgive me for the darkness in my delivery, the sorrow in my soul. song. But it's hard to be light and talk about what's right when there are so many more things that are wrong. And mama said the only way to handle wrong is to make it right. And every day you awake, you've been blessed with another day to fight. And every day you awake, you've been blessed with another day to fight. So right now, with everything in me, mind, body, and soul, I stand. Dig deep, find every ounce of strength, clench my fist, and victoriously I lift my hands. We will not claim defeat. We will not go quietly into the night. You can't cheat death. Death is inevitable. Yeah, I know, but I refuse to go without a fight when there's so much more to be done, and you've got so much more to give. This isn't the end of the world or a death sentence, but first you've got to choose to live. And when you're weak, brother, sister, lean on me. Together we are unstoppable, and every day you shine as an example to someone else that life is not impossible. We will become advocates. We will educate our community one and the same, and we will fight for this cause to ensure that the people that have died from this disease haven't died in vain. HIV, AIDS, big disease, little title, little people talk about gay community or straight community, but this poem is about the big fight for survival. It takes $0 to lay their lifeless, countless hours and dollars to fight this, but to take back our lives, take back our community, and the future for our children, priceless.
Fitness is an important part of my daily routine.
Part of my routine is thinking about what I need to do for the day. Once I'm out of the bed, we're running.
Making sure I take time for myself is part of my routine. And as a part of my routine, I make sure I take my HIV meds before I go to bed.
I always take my HIV medicine every day.
Switching from 3 pills a day to 1 pill a day just made it seem like this is it. If you don't feel good, you can't give your best.
Get in care, stay in care.
Live well.
Alrighty, folks, we're back with Unfortunately, but James, I want you to come back like a million and three times or anytime you want to promote something.
I want to come back, definitely.
James Bush, who is back on Positivamente Joe, shared his amazing story and background and life. And we're sadly coming close to the end of this podcast. But if people are listening, James, let's first start with how the hell can they find you? How can they reach out if there's that person who's paused, who just wants to support, or anyone listening who just wants to say thanks? Where can people find you to reach out to?
Sure. So anyone can find me on Instagram at bushpilot, and that's bush with an E, so B-U-S-H-E pilot, and the same handle on Twitter as well.
Awesome. Bush Pilot, folks, look him up, share, like, and subscribe on his pages. James, this is one of my favorite television shows growing up was, of course, as a gay man, Inside the Actor Studio with the James Lipton. And so I always love for my guests to kind of shed this and get into these personal questions. You can expunge and expound as much as you'd like. I have a series of 10 questions that I ask you. You answer them honestly. Take as much time as you need, and whenever you're done, you say, I'm ready, and then I'll go to the next question. How does that sound?
Okay, sounds great.
All right,
so I'm scary.
The very first question is, what is your favorite word?
Definitivamente.
Oh, okay, and why?
It's a little joke between me and my best friend as a Spanish word that you can say, and that no one else in Spain nor Latin America ever uses in any context of like real life conversation ever. So yeah, it always provokes lots of fun memories and conversations for me.
Awesome. What is your least favorite word?
Can't.
Okay.
And that comes from my dad, because he has a phrase which is, if you think you can, or if you think you can't, you're probably right. And I'm pretty sure it comes from someone even more philosophical. But I always try and think that you can do it, but maybe just not yet. Or I remember somebody once saying to me that you can do whatever you want to do, you're just waiting for the timeline to catch up.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Papa Bush, for sharing that wisdom of knowledge with James. I appreciate that. Shout out to Papa Bush. That was awesome. What are your turn-offs? What turns you on?
Okay, Papa Bush can't listen to this bit. turn on somebody who has a real dry, witty sense of humor.
I agree. What are some of your, here's the flip side to it, Papa, you can put your earphones back on. What are some of your turn-offs? What are some of your turn-offs?
Somebody spends too much time at the gym.
Okay, so none of those musclehead grunters were there like 7 days a week, no? Not your thing?
No. Like three or four days a week is fine. And
yeah.
Kind of like, okay. You know,
liking health, send... but not overboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. What sound or noise do you love to hear?
The ocean.
Oh, such a good one. Such a good one.
Just the most relaxing, but not like the kind of, you know, via an app ocean, actually sort of just lying on a beach, hearing it there. That's the best part of
it. What sound or noise do you hate?
The sound of wet rubber on rubber. Like when you get into a car and it's been wet outside and then your feet kind of squeak on the mat. Can't do it.
That just made me cringe. I just heard.
There we go.
Okay, moving on. What is your favorite curse word? And Mama Bush, please take your earphones off for this one.
Mama and Papa Bush.
Okay.
Oofed. This is a good one. I don't know. Charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Because in Scotland.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason for this, right? Because in Scotland, everybody uses that word in a really sort of friendly way. Like, oh, you know, he's a good, insert the word here. But in England, this is why I can't bring myself to say it, it is literally the biggest no-no ever. You would be crucified for saying it. Whereas in Scotland, everyone uses it all the time and as a term of endearment. So yeah, charisma, and talent.
Yes, shout out to Mama Roo, and yes, Papa Bush and Mama Bush, your son did you proud and did not use the word, but everyone listening knows what he's talking about. That was amazing. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Good question. Can't go back to the charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent reference now. I'm terrible at that. I think I would. Do you know what? Having spent a ridiculous amount of time in lockdown watching a certain show on Bravo, I think being a chief stew on a super yacht would be cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were the name
actually,
of your
what am I talking about? What am I talking about? Captain on a super yacht.
Oh, there you go.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering if you were going to say captain. This is not on the 10 questions, but just as an aside, would you have like a name for your boat? This is not on the list, but I just wanted to interject to see, would you have a name for your boat?
I mean, I was a little bit of a Star Trek geek when I was younger, so I was a super Trekkie, so it would probably be Enterprise.
Yes!
Somebody's probably already taken it, and I just have to put, like, I don't know, a dash Z.
I'm sure there's a million Enterprises out there, so you could do US Enterprise and then dash your date of birth or something. We don't know. We'll figure it out. All right. What profession would you never like to attempt or try?
I am squeamish beyond belief, so I could never be a surgeon.
Ooh, yeah. Do you not like the sight of blood? I hate it. I can't do it.
No, absolutely not. Not for me.
And our final question in this homage to James Lipton is, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear St. Peter or God say at the pearly gates when you arrive?
I would want them to say that you played your hand the best you could.
That is so fitting. You played your hand the best you could. James, it has been an honor to take this last half hour journey with you on this podcast. And I want you to know you have a brother out here in the Shy in Chicago. When you come out, we have to stop by a pub and get a couple pints and just shoot the shit. But you are always welcome back on this podcast. You ever want to register your opinion on the day? You want to take over a whole fucking episode and just do your own thing? I am honored. And from me to you, thank you for trailblazing, for lighting paths on fire, and for really being a hero to me in this year of darkness and solitude and just a lot of emotional baggage. You were one of the lights of hope, and so that's why I'm honored to have you on this show. I thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. We're 12 hours apart, but I thank you so much for doing this for us.
You are so, so welcome, and genuinely from me, it's been fantastic, and yeah, I can't wait to come back.
Yes, I can't wait to have you back, and I've never been out to Scotland. I need to go because I want to go see the beaches.
You need to.
Yes, yeah. I'm planning on it. Once all this COVID shit dies down, I would love to go out there. You're going to have to give me the tour, and then we can go to the pub and shoot the shit and have some fun out there too.
Folks,
literally, I want to thank James again for being on Positivamente Joe. Stay tuned after the jump. For my final thoughts, I'll try not to cry with James now, but I'll definitely do it during my final comments because this has been life-changing for me, but he'll have to tune in to hear what my final thoughts are. We'll be right back after the jump on Positivamente Yo.
On November 3rd, 86 out of 99 state legislative chambers are holding elections.
There are 70 million young eligible voters, the largest and most diverse generation in our country's history.
We have the power to shape our country and communities,
but we need all of us.
So picture this.
On November 3rd, we choose.
We choose who sits in 435 seats in the House of Representatives.
We choose 24 senators and 13 governors.
We choose the sheriffs, the DAs, and the judges too.
With 70 million young eligible voters, we choose to align a vision too humane to be political.
And make the future prouder than it's ever been.
So when the alarm goes off on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, and you arrive at your polling site to see freedom clocking two-hour waits.
Vote anyway. When the machines stop working and your job starts calling because American democracy is running late again, vote anyway.
Your vote is bigger than the color of your state.
It is a revolution in motion.
The moment you took to the streets and to the screens to share your outrage,
you recommitted to our collective dream, which requires that you lift it out of hashtags and into DC and your communities.
Because remember, this is the same year that brought a pandemic which disproportionately killed Black and Brown Americans and Indigenous people.
The same 2020 that took the breath of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Nina Pop, and Dominique Fels.
So on November 3rd, 2020,
know that voter suppression will be present.
Vote anyway. You will be discouraged.
Vote anyway.
Tuesday will be imperfect.
Vote anyway.
When every headline is shouting democracy and duty in swing states,
you will be asked to believe in a dream that never came to fruition for every American. And despite your best reason,
you must uphold it. Because we can't vote a world into existence that we can't first imagine.
The American dream is ours for the making.
Come alive for ancestors who need you to finish their story.
A story that begs for atonement.
Cast your promise.
Cast your promise. Cast your vote.
Cast your vote.
But vote!
Well, folks, that is our show. It has been chock full of so much depth and knowledge. I, again, thank James Bush for taking the time out of his life and schedule to sit down and talk with us. James, you don't know it, but you truly have been an inspiration to me. And at the beginning of this year, like most of us, I struggled with what to do next. Should I continue this podcast? Should I not? And between you and Diva and several others who I followed and saw your heroic story of fighting, even in these troubling times when it comes to HIV and AIDS, you lifted me up. And so thank you so much. I'm gonna try not to get emotional, but truly you are a trailblazer and a hero. continue to change the world. I cannot wait to go to a pub and get a pint with you and have you come out to Chicago and go to a bar and get a drink with me. And whether it's uni or college, your story is gonna resonate with me always. Thank you so much. I hope all of you listening have had such a badass time with me too today. As I always end, Luz y Progreso H. Thank you guys so much for listening. Oh my God, tune in next week. We're only gonna go up from here. It's gonna get better and better every week, I promise. Until next week, te quiero, te adoro. Ciao, take care of yourself. Luz y Progreso. Positivamente yo. Bye guys. Adios.